Get ready for takeoff. This is a First Class Podcast. All things Winnipeg Jets hockey. The flight starts now. Welcome to part two of the First Class Podcast. As we continue on, we're going to look at the rest of the four-game road trip with the three remaining games in Toronto, Ottawa, Montreal. Tim Bigelow along with Warren Smith. And then, of course, we'll touch on the last two games of the regular season in Calgary and Chicago. Welcome back.
March 31st, Saturday, they are in Toronto. The big hype on this being the two Canadian teams going to the playoffs, meeting up. You know the Jets are going to have a better performance. It's also the Jets' last game versus another playoff-bound team, never mind Canadian team. First period, 0-0 score, and even keel for both these teams. I think if any of the periods, it's like the Jets got stronger as this game went on.
First period, a little bit of tentative too, and I thought both teams were very aware of the speed and skill that the other team possessed and were really active with their sticks and clogging up lanes and things like that. I thought it had a decent flow. The speed was there and everything like that. It was like building anticipation for the second period.
The big thing to note from the first period with about 2 minutes left, Ben Chiarot's point blast was blocked by Travis Dermott, and he didn't return to the game. So the
108, buddy.
So the Leafs had to play the rest of the game with 5 D-men.
And McDermott's been a good puck-moving defenseman since he got called up for the Marlies. It's been a good piece for them.
Trying to think of a comparative for Dermott to Winnipeg, but I don't really think there is.
Similar to like maybe a Morrill, you know, yeah, without the same sort of experience in the league. But similar, he's a good puck-moving defenseman. He can skate. He's filled a role for them. He's fit in nicely for, you know, they're an underrated D-core. I'd say that's sort of where you look for a weakness in the playoffs, you know, who they're going to match up against. I think, you know, they feel like Anderson. I don't think Anderson is that next level goalie that they seem to think he is, but his numbers are pretty good. He's had a good season, and obviously they have a lot of offensive talent similar to the Jets. They have four lines that they can roll that are pretty solid. I just found when I watched that game, didn't you feel like the Leafs, it's like, man, you could never hack it in the Central. Like, if you're lucky that you are where you are, they got a ton of skill, a ton of speed. You know, Leafs Nation has never been more pumped, but I'm telling you, man, against teams that are going to play the body, I don't think they kind of shy away from it a bit. They got a couple guys with good grit. They got what's that fucking veteran? I want to say Swede.
Polak?
Who am I talking about? Oh, no, not Polak. But he has a little bit of sandpaper. No, no, they're forward. Who's their forward that I'm talking about? He's a gritty guy. Can score a bit.
Bozak.
Not an Elander. Not any of those skill guys. Who am I talking about?
Ben Riemsdyk.
Oh, for fuck's sakes. Never mind. No, not Ben Riemsdyk. He's American. They have like a Swedish player who's he's one of those fucking a little bit of a shit disturber and he can score some goals. Who am I talking about?
I have no idea who you're talking about.
I'm driving my fucking gears. I don't even know what I'm talking about here. You get through the game and I'll start.
Yeah, I'm going to get you through the game here. You're not talking about Patrick Marleau. I know that. Maybe. You would remember Patrick Marleau. Actually, Patrick Marleau adds a little more grit to this team. That, I will say. He does opening the scoring for Toronto. That is on a power play. And that was set up by Matthews and Gardner, by the way, on that. And I'm pulling up my phone because now I want to pull up the Leafs lineup, too.
Maybe sure. Driving my gears. Komarov. Leo Komarov, man. He's got that little bit of edge to his game. He drops the body on guys sometimes, and he can score a bit. One of their veteran guys, similar to like a Brian Little, in that, you know, going forward, you know, they're trying to debate whether they're going to bring him back. I mean, the Jets haven't fully gone that way with Brian Little. What I mean is like Komarov and Van Riemsdyk, guys that have been around that are making a few extra bucks when they're looking for cap space to pay off guys like Marner that are coming up and Matthews, their contracts. Komarov's been a good player for them since he got there, I thought. Yeah, he has a little bit of sandpaper, but when you go up and down the lineup, there just isn't a lot of that they have. So when they go up, that's why I think they're crossing their fingers that tonight that the Boston Bruins win out so they don't have to play them, right? If they lose, they got to play the Bruins. If the Bruins win, they play the Lightning, who they match up better against. You broke down the numbers earlier, but even just watching it, eye test, you can see that they're a team that thrives skill-wise against faster teams. They can do well, but against teams that are a little bit more physical, they'll struggle with them.
And Tampa's almost, I would say, hoping that Boston has to play Toronto. That's where they're at too.
Hey, it's just no something. When I was watching this Leafs game, that's just what I thought. I thought the skill was there on both sides. I thought there was a fast paced game. It was a pretty good game. I thought it, once again, you know, it's kind of like a redemption game from earlier in the season. Fucking losing in the opening two games. They got the Montreal Canadiens back for that shit loss at the start of the year, and now they got the Leafs back in this one.
The Bruins would have to win in regulation or overtime. Get the 2 points. They're a point behind Tampa Bay. So, and they can't win in a shootout because then they'd have this. Oh, no. They could win in a shootout, yeah, because they still have more points. They just have to win, however they do that. Anyways, Marleau gets a power play goal. I'm not going to complain about the Sherratt holding. That kind of was holding behind the net. That's fine. The Jets, in the second period, do respond with three of their own goals. And again, Josh Morrissey gets his six. That's from Ehlers and Trouba. And he kind of fakes a shot and then moves mid-ice and then blasts it and gets it through. Stastny is creating traffic in front.
He's been very noticeable lately for that net front presence, whether it's on the power play or on 5-on-5. He really takes on that role.
The second goal, Dustin Byfuglien gets his seventh on the power play. And that's similar to Morrissey. He gets a shot through a pair of screens. And one of those screens is Paul Stastny.
Once again, Stastny in front of the net. Yeah, creating havoc.
At least on this one, Stastny does get the second assist. Wheeler with the first. So Byfuglien seventh. And then the No Love line right before the end of the second period. And they were playing great all game. Kopp had put it off the outside of the post. Adam Lowry gets it. And as Kopp goes to net front, Lowry's able to put it in front. And then Kopp puts it short side over the pad of McElhinney. Andrew Kopp with his sixth, Lowry and Tanev, because really Tanev's speed also prior to that was the reason why the Jets were still in the zone.
Yeah, you know how big a fan I am of Joel Armia. He's got great hands, great dangles, but man, that line just looks great together. You know, don't you think? Adam Lowry, Brandon Tanev, Kopp, they all bring something different to the table. Brandon Tanev with his unbelievable breakneck speed, and they're all for big time hitters, but he brings that. And then you got Adam Lowry, just big body presence, just dominates down low, very hard to take off the puck, creates a lot of space for that speed for those guys. And then you got Kopp, who's kind of like a jack of all trades, really high hockey IQ. His physicality has really stepped up, and he plays even more physical when he's on that line. He's got a little bit of scoring touch too, so I just love that trio together. There's something else, and they've been playing some really good hockey there. Nice goal by Copper.
Another, what do you call them, themes of the season? Winnipeg and too many men penalties.
Oh, man. If somebody could get us that fucking stat, if somebody could tell us how many times we've gotten a bench minor for too many men, you got to think, we got to be top five. I don't watch like the other teams nearly as closely. It's kind of hit or miss whether I'll watch another game, but fuck.
We've taken a lot of them. We don't get burned on this one at 10-12. It clearly is too many men. I can't even.
No,
I
can't argue that.
You can't argue. No. There's a few games prior to this one where it was like, and it was so clear. This one, two defensemen jump on the ice, 4-1 going off. And then Morrissey realizes they both jumped on, so he tries to circle back already in a play. That's how this one happens. You're just like,
Jets got to stop getting their fucking hand caught in the cookie jar.
It's a 2-for-1 deal. I wonder if you know what? We never see times when they get away with it. They get caught every time. Andrew Kopp kind of seals this. You know, the Jets shut this down in the third period other than that one Freudian moment. And then Andrew Kopp forced Hainsey to take a holding penalty. He would have scored in an empty net if Hainsey doesn't hold him. But two things about that is that penalty forced Toronto to have to put back in their goalie. And subsequently, they had pulled their goalie around 2:46 of the remaining in the third to try and get a pair of goals.
Yeah, that officially sealed the deal for the Leafs and for the Jets.
So Andrew Kopp gets the 3-1 goal, and then he proceeds to make sure that the Leafs have to put their goalie back in and draw a penalty. And technically, you could have awarded him a goal on that. He's scoring on that if he doesn't get held. So the Jets put together what was a good 3-1 road win.
Really good bounce back, too, from that fucking just gong show game against the Hawks. And their last chance to play against a team that's fighting for something as well. A playoff-bound team. Last sort of statement game that they had the opportunity to make. A little bit of give back from that start of the year that they still owed the Leafs one. So it was nice that they came out strong, They rebounded quickly. They didn't let that shit Hawks game get in their head and start doing things differently. They just went back to playing Jets hockey. I think you said it perfectly. That third period might have been, you know, I guess some fans would be like, there wasn't a lot going on there. Jets just shut her down. They weren't worried about getting that goal number four, that goal number five. They had their opportunities. Like you said, Copper was right there real close to getting a goal. But they weren't worried about numbers, no personal numbers. They just wanted to shut it down. And that's respecting your opponent, too. The Leafs have a lot of really good offensive weapons, and the Jets said, enough's enough. No risk in their game, I'd say.
Yeah, and that's the type of game, if they can play in the playoffs, that they want to be playing. If you can be up 3-1 going in the third and then do a shutdown.
Right.
And force a team to have to go and take extra risks.
You can capitalize on their decisions. Yeah. You don't have to force the issue. Yeah. Once you're up a cup, your talent will come through and you can get a couple extra goals if you need that extra cushion in the playoffs. But most games in the playoffs, they go down to the wire. There's less calls made, it's tighter checking, more is let go. It's a grittier game, and there's a lot of one goal games in the playoffs, two goal games in the playoffs.
You can't help but think when the Jets, you know, at home, Dallas, L.A., Anaheim, Nashville, Boston. Only one of those teams not going to the postseason, Dallas. But at the time they were playing, they were still fighting to try and get in. Yeah, bubble team. Jets in close games coming out on top. Then, yeah, you have that one where we just throw it away. And then they come back and, again, against Toronto, put in a solid 60-minute effort. And everything's right in the world. Now, after that, they go into Ottawa and Montreal on back-to-back nights. Helly gets to start in Ottawa. And Craig Anderson plays it for the Senators. He's had a terrible year, just like everybody in Ottawa. And the Jets win 6-5 in a shootout. And forgive me, but I think the Jets got so far ahead in this game that they kind of just let Ottawa back into it. And by saying that, because it was pretty much 3-1 after the first, but it was 3-0 for the Jets. And again, the no love line gets us kicked off. Worth noting, Dustin Byfuglien got the night off. They actually let him healthy scratch.
Yeah, and instead Tucker Pullman.
Yeah. Gabrick, Stone, Weidman, center Weidman, not the defenseman Weidman, and Clark MacArthur were injured for Ottawa. It's the last game of the year that Eric Karlsson played because he didn't go on the road trip. So this is the last game.
Yeah, and he grabbed the puck at the end of the game, right?
Yeah, out of the net in a loss.
To the chagrin of Senators Nation.
Taking the puck out of the net at the end of the game on a game you lost. I think there was more people that were upset because it wasn't a win, and that's why they were really sad about him grabbing the puck. I don't know. So Andrew Copp from Lowry and Trouba. Trouba gets in on the assist. His point shot, the rebound actually, his point shot actually hits Lowry, and the rebound goes to Copp. It actually takes away the assist from Tanev. And down low, Tanev got control along the wall of this puck and was the one that got it back to Trouba. He originally had an assist on it. They took it away because Lowry does make contact with it in front before Koptis is able to put it into an open cage.
So despite the fact that Tanev kind of was the one that made the whole play happen by kicking it back to Trouba, he loses the apple, no points. Yeah,
definitely well involved in that goal. Again, that Lowry, Tanev, and Copp. And they're peaking at the right time. I don't care what anybody says. Not surprisingly, by the way, the Jets' second goal at 8:24, the assists go to Lowry and Copp because Lowry, Copp, and Tanev are out winning puck battles to keep the puck in the send zone. They, in this case, it's Lowry getting it back to Josh Morrissey, and he gets it through Anderson five-hole with Andrew Copp in front.
I would say the Lowry Copp Town line, no love line, we like to call them here endearingly, is that line, out of all the lines, I'd say, is the most playoff-ready. That team, they're built for the playoffs for that team. That line is built for the playoffs. And I would say they're playing at their peak right now. They're playing their best hockey. So when you want to run four lines, there's no fear putting that line out against anybody right now.
Before you can blink or go to the bathroom, the Jets have another one. And only Blake Wheeler and Craig Anderson know this was scored. There's a pair of send D-zone turnovers at 8:03. Connor gets a shot, and then Scheifele stick lifts on the second turnover and passes it to Wheeler, and Wheeler hits the goalie cam high middle of the net over Anderson. Anderson knows it's a goal. Blake Wheeler, you can see along the sideboards, is basically coasting because he knows he scored a goal. But the play goes all the way down into the Jet zone because the Jets stop playing, and then finally the horn sounds, and they go to the review, and Blake Wheeler is his 21st. Don't want to add anything on that.
Fucking cameras, man. They're too far up in the net. That's my contribution to that. It's happened to the Jets a few times. Like, push those cameras back a little bit. I thought it was a goal, too. Whenever you see the way Blake Wheeler reacted, I had no doubt in my mind that was a goal. I'm sure he felt the same way. Just the way they stopped playing, he saw that it went in the net. And, yeah, the reaction of Anderson.
There's a late goal by Ottawa, as I mentioned, Shabbat. One of his two. The second period, it's 3-2 based on a power play goal early into the second period. Matt Duchene gets his 25th on another Jet penalty. Brandon Tanev got his 8th of the season on a shorthanded goal. This one was unassisted. So the Jets at this point actually trade pairs of goals with the Ottawa Senators, because Shabbat second, and then Blake Wheeler gets his 22nd, assisted by Mark Scheifele at the 12:46 mark. So the Jets basically go into the third period leading this game. At that point, it was 5-3. More goals are scored, a pair by the Senators, and Matthew Perreault gets a much-needed goal to get off the schneid.
Oh, that was a huge monkey off the back from Matty Perreault. He couldn't buy one.
Yeah.
Amount of opportunities he's had over the last 20 games.
So Matty Perreault on a power play, he gets his 17th. Ehlers and Myers with the assist on that. Duchene added another power play goal late in the game.
I thought Matt Duchene looked like old Matt Duchene. I think he's found his game. From what I hear, he's had a pretty good second half with the Senators. He bombed when he first got there, and everybody was losing their mind. You know, like you said, you're a big fan. I'm a big fan of Kyle Turris. Thought that was a big piece. And then obviously Duchene stumbling out the gate. But he's a player, and he's going to be okay for those guys. I think he had a dirty dangle in this game that was pretty sick, and he got a goal. And I thought the Ottawa Senators played, they didn't quit. Jets were up on them. They come back. The Jets are up on, they come back. I think you were saying about him picking up the puck and the loss. I think it's just the gravity setting in of like, holy shit, there's a chance I may not come back here. And I think the Ottawa Senators wanted to win this game for Erik Karlsson, and they fought the good fight. They just didn't have enough in the tank, and just it was what it was. When the Jets wanted to win, they stepped on the throat a little bit.
Oddly enough, Ottawa actually dressed 7 defensemen for this game. I remember that now.
Yeah, I watched 11 forwards. Did you watch the pregame on this when they talked to Guy Boucher? He's a good coach, man. I like Guy Boucher. I know they've had a tough year. Thought he took a team that I think they overachieved last year. I think that's what's getting lost. It's a massive drop off from the season they had last year. I think they overachieved, and I think a lot of that had to do with a really good coaching and clutch goal scoring. And Guy Boucher said, we're dressing 7 because the defense deserve to be in this, which is sort of I wouldn't say a passive aggressive way, but a little bit way of saying, you know what, there are some forwards that don't deserve to be in the lineup. And he also said he had a lot of complimentary things to say about the Winnipeg Jets, and just said, like, listen, this is a team. He said, this is a team that has a good chance at winning the Stanley Cup. They have 4 lines that come at you in ways very difficult to handle, so we'd like to have that extra defenseman there. And the defense deserve to be in the game.
How much are you figuring that also wouldn't have played into the fact that Dermott went out the night before in Toronto, or well, I guess a couple of nights before, the Saturday game. Dermott went out before the second period, and they had to play with 5D the rest of the game. And one of the factors that Toronto talked about after that loss was they got worn down. Having second night of back-to-back games, 5D instead of 6, they got worn down by the Jets. Relentless 4-line pressure. So then you're Ottawa and you're like, hey, let's not put
ourselves in the same position as the Leafs. We'll run 11 forwards and double shift guys, like Matty Duchene said pregame, that was the plan. And he said, we got to keep up with those horses. They can go at you fast and hard and heavy, and we want to make sure that we have enough D to deal with that.
So April 3rd, the Jets, the next night, have to play the second of the back-to-back in Montreal. And so they had prepared for this. Bufflin, having sat out in the Ottawa game, they went a different direction and took out quite a number of Winnipeg Jets for the game in Montreal. In fact, I'm going to pull up exactly who was all out. Scheifele, Wheeler, Lowry, Trouba, Morrissey, and Connor Hellebuyck took the night off. But what that allowed to do was Dustin Bufflin went back in. Mitch Mathias went back in. Mark O'Donnell, Mill Carton back in the lineup. Jack Roslovic and Sammy Niku, who we haven't actually talked about at all. He had actually been brought up for the trip. American Hockey League. How did they do that with the All-Stars? Our first team?
Yeah. All-Stars? Similar to like a college college hockey or I guess the NFL with their Pro Bowl selections. He's the all team, all rookie team.
Yeah, okay, all rookie team. That's what it is.
And along with his
Mason Appleton.
His teammate Mason Appleton, two guys that are up for the Rookie of the Year. Basically, yeah. He's been unbelievable. You know, Sami Niku's numbers. He broke the record for the most points by a defenseman by a Manitoba Moose, not just a rookie defenseman, but a defenseman for the Manitoba Moose.
Oh, yes. I thought it was just for rookies.
No, it's the entire thing. So that's really impressive. Also, his confidence, man. Listening to him pregame, listening to him postgame, he felt he played an okay game. You know, you look back, you're like, oh, he was out for three goals on the ice. You know, Tim will break the whole thing. We'll give a couple notes of it about it, but it's this. I thought Sami Niku's game, outside of maybe a couple times, his, like Maurice said, his gap control, maybe his work on his gap and, you know, things, you know, he's got to work on his strength and things like that. But I thought, man, his ability to move the puck, thought he did make pretty solid reads. I thought you can just see the light at the end of the tunnel. Looking at that sick flow, the way he skates, another Finnish player for the Jets, I think can be a real impact player down the road, man. You know, I found it funny. We just watched Erik Karlsson play, possibly his last game with the Ottawa Senators. I can see Sami Niku. I don't want to put too much weight on his shoulders and raise the bar too high for him, but I truly believe that kid has the chance to be that like dynamic offensive defenseman. I mean, I love Trouba. I think Morrissey's ceiling, he doesn't have one. The offense is through the roof, but Sami Niku is a special player offensively, very gifted. He has 15 goals right now with the Manitoba Moose as well. So, yeah, I don't know. It was great. It was a bit of a coming out party. Roslo had a huge game, like you said. The guys that have been healthy scratches for the whole year, Milkarton, Dano, and mediocre Mitz Mathias, they got a chance to play another game in a Jets jersey, which how many going forward are left for those guys? Not too bad. I thought for them bringing the B team or the C team, I thought they had a pretty solid game against the Habs. I loved Carey Price's comments after about Patrick Laine's shot. Did you hear the comments about Price? Of course you did. Yeah, and he talked about...
I just want to acknowledge the fact that Carey Price played that.
Yeah, he actually played against the Jets, kind of like ducks and hides, and doesn't come to Winnipeg for whatever reason. Maybe the reason for that is for Patrick Laine's shot.
Well, now you could blame it on Patrick Laine, but he just doesn't come to Winnipeg. Still think it's in his contract. Worth mentioning, Steve Mason also went in.
Oh, sorry, I didn't say the comment. I should mention that.
Well, yeah,
the comment that Price made was that he thought he was in good position and the puck was like behind him before he knew it. He thought he had the angle on him and it still beat him. Like it hit the back of the net by the time he got over, and he just said it was just an incredible shot. Basically, that's the gist.
Yeah, but he was in position and he just said it comes off his stick so fast that by the time he goes to react, it's already behind him.
Right, and that's the next level. And that's, yes, Carey Price is having a down year, but we're talking about the goalie who's been arguably the best goalie of the past decade. You know, still, every now and then, blown away by, you know, what an opposition player does.
It's interesting because, and we're talking about, guys that will probably be in Hockey Hall of Fame.
Oh, without a doubt.
Like, we talked about in one podcast about Henrik Lundqvist talking about Laine.
Well, Carey Price. Yeah, Carey Price just broke Ken Dryden's and Patrick Waugh's record for, like, he is their all-time leader now in wins. Like, those guys are no joke. So, for Carey Price, his legacy, it was kind of nice. It's kind of weird. I like Carey Price, okay? I mean, how can you not like Carey Price? The things he's done for Canada on the world stage as well. He's one of those guys, just like a Jordan Eberle, you always like. I like his focus. I like his competitiveness and all the things he's done. He's an amazing goalie. He's gonna be a Hall of Famer, regardless of whether they win a Stanley Cup. You know, people think it used to be, it's like, you know, you need to have a rings to have a chance to go in the Hall of Fame. I think all the things that guy has done for that team, fuck, he's gonna go down as one of the best goalies of all time. And, you know, regardless of rings. And so, yeah, no, for him to get a nice the fans gave him a bit of love this game. I thought that was nice. And he even said it's one of those things he almost kind of needed, because it's something that hasn't happened often in his career, but a couple times this season, man, he's been booed in Montreal when he's let a few goals in. So that's, it's just a good thing to see.
Well, you know what? In his best years, and injuries have kind of affected his play in the last few seasons, and the supporting cast around him is at an all-time low, as far as I'm concerned. And I mean, maybe somebody who's a Habs fan will argue with me, but I think they have the worst GM in the National Hockey League. They've made bad deal after bad deal. And Carey Price, you know, for years was keeping a team that otherwise wouldn't be a playoff team in the playoff mix because of his stellar play.
Yeah, well, there were years where the Montreal Canadiens, even though their teams were substantially better than the team they currently have that roster that they're working with, which is brutal, those teams were like middling teams. They were like bubble playoff teams without a Carey Price. He was the reason why they went into series and believed they could win because he was phenomenal, because he stood on his head, because he would make game-changing saves for that team. So that can't be lost in all this. Kind of irritates me a little bit here in that they've been booing him, but that's sports, right?
Now, my understanding on it is that Carey Price was, the accolades for Carey Price on the game against Winnipeg is because he's the all-time games played Montreal goalie.
Right. Sorry, my bad. Yeah. That, you know what I said? As soon as I said it, I thought that. But yeah, that's still worth mentioning. I think he's a few wins away yet from
And so that's that. Including, yes, as you mentioned, Patrick Waugh, Ken Dryden, Jacques Plante was number one up until Carey just passed him in games played. And I'm missing somebody else that...
And when your name is put alongside and passing guys of that stature, that matters. And when you look at the teams that those guys had in comparison to the teams that Carey Price has had, the kind of superstar talent that a guy like a Terry Sawchuk a Ken Dryden would have.
Actually, you know,
even Patrick Waugh. I mean, that team though won the Stanley Cup. It was more of a gritty team as well. But you're talking about the Stefan Richer's 40 plus goal scorer and guys like that on those teams.
Okay, you know what's funny? I want to share this with you because we're talking about it quickly, and then we'll move on. Roscoe says that he had heard and he's a guy that plays rec hockey now and basically, you know, he'd play like three games, you know, every day if he could, you know, for different teams, and been doing this for years since he's, you know, no longer playing competitively. And he said about Ken Dryden that he was the best goalie at basically staying focused when he would go 10, 12 minutes, 15 minutes without facing a puck because the team was so good it wasn't even in their end of the
100%. Race. There's something to be said for that. Like, the teams that Ken Dryden played on were absolutely stacked. So when Price is working his way up the ranks, yeah, it's going to take him a few extra games because currently they have Jonathan Drouin, who's a winger, playing the top center spot. They've, I don't know what the hell that situation was with Pacioretty, but that wasn't good for the team. They gave up an incredible pick in Sergachev, who's now lighting it up for the Lightning. Did I just do a fucking Tim thing? Lighting it up with the Lightning.
Yeah.
Right?
You did. And I appreciate
right?
it.
Right? Oh, I appreciate it. Yeah.
I'm like, I'm rubbing off on you in the right way.
Yeah, man. So, I mean, not to beat a horse to death, but fucking good on Carey Price. That's a big accomplishment. Most games played ever for a goaltender with the Habs. And that contract, that's the thing. That contract that kicks in next year, he's making $10 million next year. Kind of tough to go get free agents when that's the case.
You know, and I probably would have given Carey Price that money.
Well, for sure, especially at the time when it was given. And then and now you're looking at what he connected to the Jets. So how much is Connor
he's maybe going to have to look at the lineup that Montreal had in the night. Galchenyuk, Byron, Lekkonen. You remember that Galchenyuk, they didn't even want on the team, by the way. Lekkonen, Reichel, which is Petrie, Drouin, Schlemko, Gallagher, McCarron, Elsner, DeLaurier, De La Rose, no idea. Carr, Learnout, Shaw, that guy I recognize. Youssef, Sherback, and some rally guy.
So needless to say, it was the right game to play a bunch of kids and give
Mike Riley.
Give the night off for some guys that could use a little bit of rest to heal up some bodies that have taken the season's tickets toll on, right?
Yeah. Is it what I'm trying to say is that even Montreal and Pacioretty's down for the rest of the year. Weber's been down for a while, Shea Weber. They weren't that good even with those guys. They had traded away Plekanec. They had traded away Joe Morrow to us. Thank you very much.
Yeah, much appreciated.
Yeah. So that Montreal team and Montreal.
It certainly wasn't their A lineup either.
Mason gets 40 shots against, gives up 4, but at least he got some shots on him. Then almost the idea of putting in Mason and then letting an offensive defenseman like Nikku come into the lineup is kind of a double thing. Hey, let's get some shots at Mason, get him prepared, third. The win's secondary. But again, the Jets get up in this game early, and then they kind of get into some penalty trouble and get back into it. Patrick Laine, who you talked about, his 44th of the year was on a power play from Bufflin and Connor. That's the one that we're talking that Carey Price.
Lethal Laine with the howitzer. Yeah, that was the goal.
And then Nick Ehlers gets one from Paul Stastny for his 29th. Forgot to mention, and I forget which game it was, prior to this, Bayek blunders. He called Paul Stastny Anton and then corrected himself. I forget what game it was.
Hey, at least that's connected. You know, I know. Still Stastny, right?
Yeah, he got
You know, on that goal you just mentioned, the Nikolai Ehlers goal,
yeah.
Was there a better goal that shows cheating to Patrick Laine? Because when you watch that,
Oh, yeah.
He was cheating to Laine big time. He thought that puck was going to Laine, not Ehlers, and Ehlers able to throw that right through the wicket.
He also admitted that, too.
I mean, what are you going to do? Yeah. You got to cheat to Laine a little bit.
Now, your enjoyment would be the third goal of the Jets, fifth of the year by Jack Roslovic.
Hell yeah.
Guy can't get into the lineup. And understandably, I mean, you got to sit down and think who you'd be taking out of the lineup. And about the only guy, and hate me for saying this, is Matty Perreault, the guy I'm taking out to put Rosal in for.
I think Perreault is one of those guys. I think Joel Armia, actually. I think Joel Armia has to bring it. If he doesn't bring it, I think that's the line. Like, the little Perreault-Armia line. That's the line. Those two wingers, they're the guys that if they don't, they have a couple down games, you know, be prepared for Rosal to go in there. Great thing about the kid is he's ready to go. You know, that can be hard for a guy who's used to playing game in, game out, high minutes, down with the Moose all season. Now he's been in and out of the lineup, up and down the lineup, playing on different lines, and he comes back into the game like he's been playing all season, and he lights the lamp again. The guy's a genuine sniper. I love it.
So Lekkonen would have scored before the second ended, making it, again, a 3-1 game. But the Jets are in control of this game. In the third period, I think they kind of just let it slip a bit. Paul Byron gets his 20th of the year. And then, God, I can't remember the kid's name. Reichel gets his first as a Canadian.
Yeah, and he's the son of Robert Reichel.
Yeah.
Ex-Calgary Flame.
That's what I was going to try and say, that Kirby wasn't the Reichel some of the people might have thought we were talking about, his dad. But Kirby Reichel gets his first. And so all of a sudden you're in a tie game. Up until then, Sammy Niku gets his first, which is beautiful because he actually jumps up in the play and gets a feed from Kyle Connor right net front and puts a beauty home.
JC called it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just slide that in there.
What's that? Kyle Calder? Connor?
Isn't that his name? Yeah, beauty. Nico getting his first game. First shot. Mario Lemieux-esque. First shot ever in the NHL. And he gets
so gives the Jets up the lead again. Andrew Kopp with the other assist on that goal. And I swear, I was thinking of pro wrestling and like when Shawn Michaels like stole the belt from Bret Hart in Montreal. And it was a Montreal screw job. Because the Jets get another fucking penalty. And Galchenyuk ties his game up at 18-18. You know, less than 2 minutes left on a power play, on a penalty that I thought was pretty suspect as usual. And I'm like, here we go. Fucking Montreal screw job. Winnipeg Jets version.
Classic. Hey, Steve Mason, mixed reviews. How did you feel about this game?
I'm telling you, I'm glad he's healthy. I don't care about the number of goals against. I thought he had to face a lot of shots. I thought he was pretty consistent in most of the game. Again, against a lineup that's half these guys you don't have a book on. It's not like Montreal, you could say that there would be a system in place. These guys are kind of freewheeling it through most of the game.
I think he looked pretty composed in the net. I thought he looked like, compared to Comrie, sometimes Comrie looks like the baby face kid that he is at the moment. That he's not quite ready for that. I thought Mason looked pretty composed and solid for a guy who hasn't played for a long time. That being said, I thought he looked like he had a tennis racket on his glove hand. He could not trap the puck if his life depended on there. He made some nice pad saves, going side to side, showing off some athleticism. But I appreciated Connor Hellebuyck a little bit more upon watching this game once again. I know that they were breaking out the stats that once you get rid of those first two goals of the game, Mason's numbers are pretty fucking solid, like really solid numbers. And yeah, I wouldn't put all the goals on him by any stretch in this game. That being said, there were a couple I thought that if Connor Hellebuyck's in the game, maybe this game isn't as close and it doesn't, you know, go down to the wire the way it does.
You know what? I won't disagree. I also wanted to say that I could appreciate that we took out two of our four top centers and didn't dress them. We didn't dress our best defenseman. And
that's true. So I just wanted to hear what you thought about it, too. I know a few different people kind of said, like, some people said, yeah, you know, Mason played really well. I thought he played awesome. And they asked me, like, what do you think about him? Like, tennis racket on the glove hand. But he wasn't perfect. He wasn't Connor Hellebuyck, but I thought he did enough to get the win. I think maybe enough to give you a little bit of confidence if there is a tweak or something in the playoffs going forward. I think Mason, you know, he's the kind of guy that can go into the net out of nowhere, you know, and handle some pressure and not be intimidated like maybe a Comrie would if thrown in there, or even a Michael Hutchinson. But speaking of which, didn't plan on talking about it, but fuck. Since Michael Hutchinson's recent demotion after getting called up at the club again, he's been bombing and his numbers have just dropped. I think he's had a hard time. You know, we talked about initially at the start of the year how he went down there and he did his work and he's playing some of the best, you know, of his life and deserves to call up when he did. But I think this last time around, I think it's, you know, it's taken a toll on him a little bit. The up and down and just not really getting any time with the club.
Well, then he got an injury too.
And they got an injury to boot.
But he's there, and I almost think that's a safety valve for me, that he's there. And again, I'm not really particularly caring about the numbers other than if he's healthy, fully healthy, because obviously Connor Hellebuck's the guy to go with, but Mason is now available and he's not Connor Hellebuck, but he's not Eric Comrie. And knowing that Hutch is down there still putting in the work, and I hope that he and Comrie have some success down there, because the rest of the guys on that young Moose team that are down there deserve to have a good playoff run.
Well, and after their extremely hot start where they were absolutely like blowing up the AHL, the Moose were so far ahead at one point in the season. Played, you know, around 500 hockey since then. But, I mean, when you're looking at the fact that, you know, just recently Samu Niku, their best offensive defenseman and best defenseman is gone. He's come up recently. We've had Tucker Pullman up here for huge chunks of the season, sitting as a healthy scratch or playing. You look at Jack Roslovic being up, and, you know, Kyle Connor can't really put as much because he came up real quick in the season. But, you know, Roslovic, Niku, and Pullman, and then you throw in the fact that we've had to bring up Hutchinson and we had to bring up Comrie. So now you're playing, you know, guys like Jamie Phillips down in between the pipes without all of their best defensemen and their most dynamic player, Jack Roslovic, who's an all-star for them. And we've had him up since for the second half of the season. So, but it's going to be exciting, man. I'm stoked. Are you going to go to some Moose games? Try to find a way.
Yeah, find a way.
I think that's going to be exciting hockey for those of you out there that can't get out to a Jets game, because fuck, those tickets are hard to come by. You know, everybody's calling in favors from, you know, every person under the sun trying to grab tickets, and they're pricey tickets. They're tough if you have a family. If you got a family, you want to take kids, go to those Moose games. They're gonna be good games going forward this year.
So yeah, Trouba and Morrissey don't play this game, so the top two defensemen for the Jets. And keep in mind, Danil and Mathias are in this game in addition to a blue liner for his first time. So yeah, I give a pass that, you know, there would have been some breakdowns. There would have been more opportunities for another team to basically have some more offense on, which I think also, like I said, was to get Steve Mason shots and see how he handled taking.
Bottom line is, once again, it's like I remember the interviewers after the game were kind of looking for Paul Maurice to sort of say something a little bit more negative, and he's like, nah, got a W. We did what we needed to do. Young kids got to play, you know, on to the next one. And once again, the Jets keep rolling. You know, they laid that one egg in Chicago. Were Ottawa and Montreal the cleanest games? Were they a little bit sloppy? Did they take maybe some ill-advised penalties? Was it their tightest games? No, but they did find a way to put the puck in the net quite a bit and get the W, and that's all that matters. And then
Kyle Connor gets his 30th, by the way.
Hey, yeah, let's overtime. Not forget that. Kyle Connor, 30, that's a big one. Hey, that's a $250,000 goal right there. That's an extra bonus for him. So on top of that, gets a little...
Jack Roslovic gets a goal and assist because he gets the primary assist on the overtime winner, and Tyler Myers. And of course, just, you know, Roslovic does a lot in this, but it's nice because, again, the young guys getting the opportunity on the 3-on-3.
Just prior to that, yeah, you're right. Jack Roslovic sets up Kyle Connor. That's the first time we always talked about, you know, let's see these kids play together. Because when they played for the Moose, they were incredible together. Crazy chemistry. Finally, they take out a bunch of the regulars, and these two get to play on the same line. We got to see them all game play, and they look really good together. And in the OT, you know, yeah, Niku was on for a few goals, whatever. Man, he made a huge defensive play, 2-on-1, to stop the Habs. That could have been the game winner for the Habs. And then goes back the other way, creates an offensive opportunity just prior to that goal by Kyle Connor. So the kids are all right. That's what I was texting my buddy's big offspring fan. Growing up, we were joking around. Kids are all right, eh? Samu Niku, first game up, has a pretty solid game. Like he said, probably not his best, but pretty fucking solid. Jack Roslovic assists Kyle Connor on the game winner, and the Jets get the win.
Pretty well summed up. So the Jets go 3-1 on the road trip. And at that point now, we're basically, what, 9-1 in the last 10? With still two games left to go. 9-1-0, which is actually the best stretch of the year. Best time to have a stretch like this is at the end of the year. So we got two home games to go through, again against teams that aren't going to be playing in the playoffs, much like Ottawa and Montreal. But the Jets have to go and play these games. They take on the Calgary Flames in the first of the two home games before finishing up against Chicago. And Hellebuck gets to start. John Gillies gets to start for Calgary, which I think is because I believe Calgary has another injury to their goalie, if I'm remember correctly.
Mike Smith got hurt again.
I think so. Or they just decided to shut him down and see
how. Remember what I was saying? I was worried about them having to play Matthew Tkachuk because he's a bit of a Brad Marchand, and he didn't play this game either. Eh? He was out.
Yeah.
So that's also another one.
Actually,
one
you know what
you want to write down, because you know Matthew Tkachuk plays that game. Maybe it's a little bit goes a little bit different.
It was a different lineup for the Calgary Flames. Just want to bring it up. Travis Hamonic. Christopher Stieg, who they're not even sure they're going to re-sign. Monahan, Brody, Tkachuk.
So basically all of their best players. That's their
core. Well, short of Goudreau.
Yeah, short of Goudreau. That's their core team right there, all out of the lineup. So
yeah, and not surprisingly, because it's the end of the year, they're in a situation, I don't know what they're going to do as far as rebooting their team. They don't seem to have a Blake Wheeler, Brian Little character, veteran guys on that team right now, which used to be their defense, and now that defense, not so much.
It's the team that I think they're underachieved this year. I think on paper, they're a better team than they played.
And they were in the running up until about the trade deadline to be in a wild card spot, and then they just fell off.
Just a little shout out to Tim and Sid. Remember when you were going, you couldn't really settle on whether the Winnipeg Jets or the Calgary Flames were going to be the team coming out of the Western Conference. I guess that's become a little bit easier for you guys now.
Did they get some whiteout when they were talking about, yeah, the team coming out of the West being Winnipeg or Calgary? Are they just going to white out the Calgary part?
Yeah, just go Calgary back in time. Go, yeah. Do not say that.
Yeah, yeah. Or just not
dry erase.
Yeah. The Jets, again, get up in the first period with the Blake Wheeler, his 23rd. It's interesting. Blake Wheeler was chasing this record for the... Well, I was hoping Blake Wheeler was chasing the assist record. Blake Wheeler really doesn't give a flying fuck about how many assists or goals he has. But he gets a beauty goal from Bufflin and Connor in the first period. And right early in this game, sets this game in motion less than a minute in.
Yeah, sweet hand eye.
So, with that, the Jets trade goals in the second period. But again, much like the other game, like I said, with Toronto, this game with Calgary, again, with the regulars back in the lineup, because the Jets put all these regulars back in, so Sammy Niku is not playing, and all the regulars are playing. Second period, Paul Statsny gets his 16th, a great tip play on a bench rot shot from Nick Ehlers. Actually, both of these were tips.
Right. I was actually going to say, it's worth talking about that. Is Dustin Bufflin at the start of the year, how many times have we talked, you couldn't hit the broadside of the barn, and he was trying to blast, you know, 100 plus mile an hour shot every time.
Well, it's West Coast.
Yeah. He was West Coast. And now you look at him, and he's making some smarter decisions with the puck. He's just trying to make sure it goes through traffic. We got tons of net front presence. We got guys with very good hands. And I think that's a noticeable change in Buff's game. And to no surprise, Ben Chiarot doing the exact same thing.
So Bufflin gets a shot, and it's a high deflection, if I remember correctly, by Blake Wheeler, which basically takes that higher shot and brings it down and pretty much gets by Gillies. The one on Statsny, he's actually being held in the corner after being knocked down. Chiarot fakes making the point shot, then moved towards the middle. And Paul Statsny in the post-game interview says, I made eye contact with Ben and I just knew the spot I had to go to. And he does a slap pass on the ice that Statsny's able to put up top.
Yeah, it was a gorgeous tip, but what a heady play by Ben Chiarot. We've been kind of talking about him the last couple podcasts because it's worth mentioning. We're talking about a guy, again, bubble player that was barely on this team, healthy scratch at the start of the season.
20-plus games.
Couldn't find his way into the lineup, and now it's very difficult, even when healthy. Say Kulikov is back or Anstrom comes back. I mean, does Chiarot come out? I don't think so. And look at that play, man. That's a skilled play. We're talking about usually Maurice talks about that's not the goal that he hones in on when he's looking at Chiarot's game. That's a nice play, but what do you want for Ben Chiarot is his physicality, the way he's punishing guys, big hits, huge on the PKs, taking on a role on the penalty kill. man,
shots.
The patience on that play to make eye contact, to put that on the money, that little hesitation slap pass, that's a hell of a play. One of the nicest plays we've seen offensively from Ben Chiarot. Really rounding out his game and becoming an important player for the Jets.
Shutout's broken by a first NHL goal, and it's just a fluke. So, foo on Hellebuck getting another shutout before the end of the year. But, Spencer Fu, first goal. He is standing in the blue paint, and shot from point goes off of some part of him.
Hey, 20 years from now, he went bar down. 20 years from now, he went bar down. Right? 20 years from now, that's Nikolaj Ehlers on Henrik Lundqvist going bar down in the net, but on Helly, obviously. Yeah, he'll live with it. It was a trash goal. It goes in, whatever. Go Woo.
It did tie Hellebuck with Tom Barrasso for most wins in a season by an American-born goaltender. Wins in a season, which is a record that Barrasso had when he got to backstop Jaromir Jagr, Ron Francis, and
a team that was pretty good in its own right.
Mario Lemieux.
Yeah, they were pretty good.
I believe they had Larry Murphy playing defense for them the year that he got that record. But I remember being like, everybody was kind of laughing at Barrasso racking up the wins because we were sure that, you know, Kelly Rudy or name any goaltender that really wasn't a great starter in the National Hockey League, playing net for that Pittsburgh team, you still won. So Barrasso, and that was a twilight in his career.
What a fucking accomplishment, though, by Connor Hellebuck. We talked about this a bit off air. Again, just he is receiving some praise now, and people are putting him in the discussion. But let's go beyond putting him in the discussion. Vasilevsky, sure, he's put up in amazing numbers. Apparently, Rene's the favorite. He's got the name and the cachet, and most likely will win the Vezina. But this has to hold a little bit more weight. He ties it here, and everybody knows because you've already watched the game in the Blackhawks game. He wins it, and he becomes the winningest goalie in NHL history for an American-born goalie. Most wins in a season.
Yeah,
hell of an accomplishment for a guy who, at the start of the year, was the backup goalie and was maybe going to see 40% of the games. It wasn't 100% given. The job wasn't given to Steve Mason, but he was brought over here because, you know, they weren't sure that Hellebuck was ready to take the next step. Well, man, did he go above and beyond this year. Like, the guy has, to break that record, that's got to feel good. First, getting the All-Star nod right on, that was a hell of a step. Clinching the playoffs with the Jets, taking the Jets back to the playoffs as the number one goalie, huge accomplishment. Yeah, the numbers are phenomenal, but it's the guy's fight. He allows a couple goals earlier in the game. You better believe he's going to shut you down later. Look at some of these games against the Nashville Predators or the St. Louis Blues where, you know, he's got to fight through some serious adversity early on in the game, and he doesn't cave and he doesn't bend. He just sticks with the process. He knows what makes him good. Every now and then, he'll let in a goal just like anybody else. But for the most part, man, he's been rock solid, and he's stolen some games for the Jets. And I would love to see that be close. Can you imagine? Fuck, if he won the Vezina, I'd be proud of that kid because he went through a lot in the offseason to get to this point. And so early in his career, I mean, when you look at Patrick Laine, all the things he's doing at Nikolaj Ehlers, they sort of steal the thunder from Connor Hellebuck a little bit. But this year, now to own the record, that's pretty special. So fucking right on, Connor Hellebuck. Good shit, man.
Got to be the biggest surprise of the season.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
I mean,
100%.
Nobody. I'm a Connor Hellebuck fan. I'm not going to sit here, you know, at the end of the season, hindsight, or any of that, and go back and say, I could have predicted. I thought he was going to have a better year. I thought we were going to see that version we saw when he first came up. I believed in him. I thought he was going to be important piece. I had no idea. Nobody had an idea that he was going to take over the reins and absolutely dominate, be one of the best goalies, if not the best goalie.
Not at this level. There's no way. And myself, I really thought he was the guy playing the 40% of the games, and Steve Mason was going to be the reason for it. And so, yeah, I'd be one of the people that would say that I kind of was of the opinion that Connor Hellebuck was never going to have a year like this. So in hindsight on this now, what I really want to say is, as we talked about Eric Comrie earlier, who I'm a big fan of, Eric Comrie. And I'm like, okay, so let's give Eric Comrie more time for the maturation that he needs, because it might be a few more years, and let's not throw him under the bus. It's nice every year he's getting a couple games up with the big club. He's still got to hone his craft. And now we can be confident that we've got enough goalies, or the goalie that's going to take us to the big game. I wouldn't have said that at the beginning of the year about Connor Hellebuck. I am really excited to see what he does in the playoffs. We'll talk about that in the playoff preview. We have one more game and reintroduce Jeff Glass because Saturday night last night, the Jets played the Chicago Blackhawks. Jeff Glass came back in. He's the one in the 2-1 loss in Chicago of these games because Chicago beat the Jets a number of times this year. About the only team that beat the Jets with any regularity was the Chicago Blackhawks. But Jeff Glass got to come back in, and he's a journeyman goalie that spent how many years going through all over the place to finally get to play in the National Hockey League this year. But because Chicago's goaltending after, of course, the last game that we talked about in this podcast, Jeff Glass is back on the roster.
And if there was any chance that you thought maybe the Jets might sleepwalk through the last game because it, you know, has no relevance in the standings, that's a team we saw last night, a team that was playing for their goalie a little bit, I think. Yeah, you're also, you know, obviously you're trying to get yourself right for the playoffs. This is your last chance to do that. But I think they knew what was at stake. They knew Connor Hellebuck had a chance to do something special. And sorry, Jeff Glass, you had to fucking deal with that. Hell of a game he played. Really his 15 minutes of fame so far in the NHL. You know, a little bit beyond that because he had a hell of a game that game in Chicago against us, but not so lucky this game in Winnipeg. A little different.
Yeah, there's a bit of retribution, definitely. The guys had to show up for this game at home, end this off on the right way. They do with a 4-1 win, which means they put together, by the way, a 5-win streak after the 6-game win streak with only that blemish in Chicago, which means at the end of the year, that's 11-1-0 in the last 12. If I got that right?
Sounds great, man.
And how they do that is by getting up in this hockey game. And again, early in the first period, they actually get a power play goal. Bufflin gets it from Wheeler and Laine. And let's be honest about this. Did you get a sense that Chicago was really cheating over on Laine?
Oh, yeah. And they got lucky a couple times. Scheifele had a couple of rips that were right there, too. Very close to scoring. That's the thing. Like, it's a pick your poison. And if Dustin Bufflin now is getting shots through on a regular basis, not blasting shit into shin pads, and he can almost see he's kind of starting to feel it a little bit from an offensive standpoint. He's had a really good stretch of games this last month offensively. Man, you got to cheat to Laine because he is number one. No question about it. He's that number one option. But if you're going to you're going to give Dustin Bufflin that much room to shoot and not get out and block that, maybe a little bit of that last game. Do you really want to step in and break your foot or something trying to block that shot? Throw in, you got Mark Scheifele working that right around the slash marks, the hash marks for that little play. You got Stastny with net front presence. You got Blake Wheeler, the best passer in the game, best playmaker in the game, as far as I'm considered. And he can walk in off that half wall and let her rip. And how many times have we seen him go short side on that goalie where they're slightly cheating to the far side for Laine and he buries it top shelf? So this goal, a perfect example. Fucking Dustin Bufflin, once again, you know, finding his offense and blasting a huge shot from the point. Good way to start the game.
Wheeler with the primary assist and Patrick Laine with the secondary assist. And worth noting, and we should talk about this because we're going to talk about some end of the year stats. Blake Wheeler, not that he was, and like I said, he didn't even care, ended up with 68 assists this year, 91 points, 23 goals. He scored a ton of goals.
68, that's one back Mark Savard, isn't it? Wasn't Mark Savard 69?
Yeah, just one back.
Shit.
And he was scoring goals. And I know that's how close he was. Personal best for Blake Wheeler. You know what? There's more years to come.
Yeah, you got another, three or four lockdown for sure for Blake Wheeler getting to play on the power play with Patrick Laine.
68, by the way, with a healthy scratch.
Yeah, I thought about that too. A little part of him, you know? Yeah, you're right. You said it. You know, anybody's listened to any interviews. Blake Wheeler, not a guy that's, you know, he's not going to pump his own tires.
100%, our MVP.
100% the MVP with a very close second to Connor Hellebuck.
Okay, because the National Hockey League does this. They really actually don't let goaltenders be considered MVPs. It's such a position that's absolutely required for a team to be successful in the National Hockey League. So when I say Wheeler is our MVP, that is not in any slight to Connor Hellebuck, because you need a Vezina caliber goalie to be your netbinder to win the Stanley Cup. That's a given. Connor Hellebuck this year is a Vezina candidate, 100% hands down, and not only should he be in the conversation, he is absolutely, to a point, the number one reason why the Winnipeg Jets have had the season, 50-plus win season. Connor Hellebuck is directly responsible for that. Now, on the player positions, whether you're talking defense or forwards, our MVP is Blake Wheeler. And that's hands down.
Well, he might not win the Hart because he'll go to a guy on a team that just made the playoffs in either Nathan MacKinnon or Taylor Hall, most likely. That sounds like the direction it's going.
At this point, I hope they give it to McDavid.
Probably just win the Conn Smythe. Who gives a shit about the Hart?
Yeah, exactly. Now, either of those guys could win the Conn Smythe. That might be the interesting thing on it.
That's a good fucking... that's a good situation.
Winning the cup is what's important, not these individual accolades. And the fact that Blake Wheeler gets that, this makes me happy.
Unfortunately, Patrick Laine did not catch Ovechkin in the race for the Rocket. But once again, there will be years going forward where he will win that award. So hell of a season, Laine numbers-wise.
Yeah, 36, and then he puts up 44 this year.
Not bad. Not a bad first 2 years to start your career. Now let's see what he does in the playoffs, because just like Kyle Connor and Patrick Laine, two players before joining the Jets showed that they are really second half players, and we've seen it this year already. Let's wait till the playoffs. I'm so excited for the playoffs. Can we talk about that yet? No, we gotta get through this game.
Let's get through this game. Come on, we're gonna talk about Kyle Connor's 31st goal.
Casey Calder.
Where he just strips the puck at the takes the puck at the blue line, Jets blue line, and goes in alone. And then forehand roof. Not backhand. He goes forehand in tight.
Snipe.
Up top.
Yeah.
Where mommy keeps the cookies.
Beautiful. Tattoo, yeah. Top cupboard. Yeah. Top shelf. Mama keeps the cookies. That's a good one. I love that shit. Hey, didn't I? I told you that at the start of the year, right? You're like, I never fucking heard that before, right?
Yeah, I think, well, not in a podcast way.
See, bled into you. I
save it. I've told you that certain times I'll say roof daddy. Certain times I will save it. But Connor's 31st is where mama keeps the cookies.
So you're kind of like Patrick Laine. Hold on to that move for later.
Yeah. This goal deserves that one, which is why you love it, because I'm only bringing that out for this one. And because he's on the forehand putting that up, top shelf.
I just love this kid's confidence, man. Like, Kyle Connor now. It's gorgeous. When he's going in one-on-one, like, he's scoring on you, man.
Yeah.
Like,
31.
It's good. It's pretty good. Five back from Patrick Laine. Not a bad way to start the year, especially, again, considering kid got demoted at the start of the year, went down to the Moose. Just had to pay his dues a little bit.
Yeah. That is, you know, and that's worth mentioning on Kyle Connor, because when we look at his end of the year, should be a rookie of the year. 76 games, so he didn't get to play a full year because he was sitting out for, I believe, 8 games, at the beginning of the year. And then spent some time even playing fourth line for a few games. The majority played.
Did Brock Besser play in the fourth line? Did Matt Barzal play in the fourth line at any point in time?
No. 31 goals, 26 assists, and this is another thing that's flying under the radar, is that his assists are now, as the year has gone on, catching up to his goal total. Even though he's a primary goal scorer, he's been setting up as much as... He just fits so well in the Scheifele-Wheeler mix.
Two guys who, them themselves, especially Scheifele, have pretty damn good shots and can score themselves. Both, if you had to ask them, well, like, are you more of a playmaker or a sniper? I think both of them would say, yeah, they're kind of more of a playmaker. Kyle Connor. No joke, I didn't do that on purpose. I joked about that off air. No, fucking Kyle Connor. He's a sniper.
Should be in the Calder conversation.
That's what he does. He's done it for a long time. Not in the NHL. Everywhere he's gone, he's scored goals, and he's scored a hell of a lot of goals. Second most ever in college. We talked about it a couple times, only behind Paul Kariya. That's pretty special. You knew he was going to be a player in this league, but so quick, so soon, on a team that is second overall in the NHL in points, it's pretty damn good, man.
The whole thing on how good the Jets are as a team, and we don't hear that with Barzal. They never admit, oh, he's playing with Eberle, he's playing with Andrew Ladd.
Good players. Yeah. Not scrubs. He's not scrubs.
Yeah. And getting top ice time minutes. Right next to the Tavares line,
he was
pretty much getting power time.
And hats off, man. Barzal's a special player. He's a good player. I'm not saying he doesn't deserve to win the Rookie of the Year, but like we said before, I mean, some of these things, especially as of late, the GWs, the game winners, the overtime winners, and beauty way to start the game once again. Jets getting off on the right foot. Did we get a bench liner this game? I don't think we did. We went a game without a bench liner.
Yeah. So, actually, this game on the penalties, by the way, worth noting, is that we took one minor penalty in the second period. Josh Morrissey had a slashing call, 2 minutes in penalties. This was how the Jets should play to beat anybody in the playoffs. This is that game. So Kyle Connor's goal, second period goal, put us up 2-0. Then the No Love line gets involved in the action. And again, to the template, Andrew Kopp gets a goal. His 8 from Lowry and Tanev. And that wasn't even the prettier of the two. But again, that line getting down low and getting the puck out front, and Kopp is there to just bang it in, if I remember correctly on that one. But again, it's just the hard work of this fourth line.
I mean, I don't even know what else to say about them. We sing their praises probably more than anywhere else you can find on any sort of social media. And we love this line. Yeah, Copper fucking getting another goal. Keep that streak going. All three guys getting in on it once again.
So how does Kopp follow that one up? That one jet penalty that I told you about, that Morrissey took. Andrew Kopp, shorthanded, gets his second of the game, his 9th. And Joel Armia is out there. Again, not part of the No Love line, but again, one of the reasons he gets in the lineup a lot is because of his PK time. And he's out there. Kopp is able to, like, basically spring himself and go. And then lets a bullet go. Like, Glass knows he's coming. Glass has his glove up. And Glass is frozen. And it's in the top shelf. Just a bullet by Andrew Kopp to make it 4-0 at that point.
He's shown a lot more growth offensively lately, hasn't he, Andrew Kopp? Yeah, close to double digits, closing in on that. One of the very first podcasts I think we played with the numbers about the idea of, you know, how many goals we anticipated all the lines having. I remember talking about that and thinking that Andrew Kopp had a shot at double digits, that Adam Lowry, if he stayed healthy, that I thought he had a chance to increase his numbers to 20. Unfortunately, he spent too much time this year on the sidelines due to injury.
Yeah.
But hey, I mean, close to 10 goals for your fourth liner. His second full season, you know, flies under the radar, of course, No Love line. And Tenacious T just recently getting his, Tanev just recently getting his hat trick. These guys are finding a new level of confidence with the puck, which when you're going into the playoffs, those are the kind of guys, you talked about it recently, about those like kind of guys that come out of nowhere to score really important goals or have a really big playoffs that you don't expect, you know?
Well, and teams you don't follow, because the funny thing about it is I was thinking of like the back in the day, and I was trying to think of like, and I brought up the guy from Chicago the one year who was a third liner, and I can't remember his name now. And then he got a big contract, and they had to trade him away, and then his career just ended like a couple years later. And then there's a couple back in time, but it's like a player that's on that bottom six.
Oilers. A player who played for the Ducks. Big boy. Not Patty Maroon. It wasn't Maroon. That was another guy who had a massive playoffs and got a huge payday from the Oilers.
But 1 year.
Because he had one playoff that went pretty well, where he put up some points and got a few goals.
I can't even remember that. And I wasn't thinking about talking about these guys again. Chicago does, again, take away the shutout from Connor Hellebuck on this one. They get the one goal. Patrick Kane and Murphy assist on Brent Seabrook's 7th goal. And again, 4-0 game. But Chicago, you know what? They kept playing. And that point shot would have just got, if I remember correctly, over the pad underneath the glove on him with some traffic. The only blemish on the game for Connor Hellebuck. And he gets that record for the U.S. goaling mark for most wins in a season.
So the Jets end things off on the high note, playing a hell of a game.
They are the hottest team going into the playoffs. But we were going to talk about that more, because what you will know with the First Class Podcast, Timmy Lowe, Warren Smith here with you, that gets us through the regular season. The Jets are getting set up for the postseason. We are going to have a entire episode to get you lined up on that. And you know what? At the end of however this run for the Winnipeg Jets this year goes, we'll sit down and definitely look back on the whole year in perspective on it. But 52 wins, 20 losses, 10 overtime shootout losses, best record in the franchise history, and records, tons of records.
This entire regular season, we'll just say, is part one, really. It's a long season, 82 games. Here comes part two, first round, second round, the conference final. That's going to get tougher and tougher. This is an exciting time for Jets fans. Just appreciate the moment, every single game, and hey, those of you that can get out to the game, fuck, I hope I can get out there, and I know Tim wants to too. Those are tough tickets to come by, but if you go out there, in those moments when the Jets struggle, make sure that's when you guys bring it the loudest. You know, I don't want to see the Nashville Predators fans outdoing us out there. We've been known for a while. I feel like the last couple of years, we've kind of gone down a little bit. We're waiting for something to happen. You know, that's what happens. It's kind of like the better your team gets, you know, you're waiting for them to create this excitement, but we need to, from the get-go, that very first game, as soon as they, before they even touch the puck, before the guys even hit the ice, when you get those go jets, go chants going, and if the worst shit happen and they come out the gate slow and the Wild get on top of them, fucking bring the energy and pump the boys up.
Warren's Jack. I'm Jack. The First Class Podcast is Jack that the Winnipeg Jets are going to the Stanley Cup playoffs this year. We've got a whole podcast that's going to be put up right away by myself and Warren Smith. The First Class Podcast will look at the Minnesota Wild versus the Winnipeg Jets and round one of the Stanley Cup playoffs next.